And so Hanukkah invites courage. It invites bravery to put your light out where people can see it, is to say, world, I'm here. I have something to offer. In so many moments of our lives, at least for me, I wonder if I have enough, if my reserves will be enough to last as long as maybe others or I need it to last. Hanukkah says, yes, you have enough. You are enough. What you bring is the essential light that's been missing so far.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith, and we're excited to be sharing this particular episode, at least its premiere, on the very first day of Hanukkah. More about that in just a minute. I'm with Heather Bigley, our senior producer.
Hello.
And with producer James Sturdivant.
Hello, hello.
When I grew up in grade school in Indiana, all I knew about Hanukkah was we learned a song and we were told that Jewish kids get to spin a dreidel and play a game.
Dreidel, dreidel, dreidel.
You know the song. Yes.
I have a Jewish stepmother. Yes, that's the game we play. We start at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, be prepared.
Yes.
And so I thought, wow, a holiday that involves kids. But I, of course, did not understand the whole scope. So I was really excited to be able to speak with our guest today, Rabbi Menachem Kreditor, who really, I mean, not trying to make a pun about Hanukkah, illuminated our understanding of what this holiday
Steve
is.
Not and trying to make a pun.
It just happened. And there are some beautiful things that he's going to point out, one of which is simply the place of Hanukkah in Jewish holidays.
So Rabbi Kreditor serves as the Pearl and Ira Mayer Scholar in Residence at UJA Federation New York and was the founder of Rabbis Against Gun Violence. He has been named by Newsweek as one of the 50 most influential rabbis in America.
So to start at the very beginning, I ask him simply to explain what the word Hanukkah means.
Hanukkah literally means dedication, but in true rabbinic fashion, we try to do a kind of mystical etymology. It's not quite scientific, but Chanukah can be separated into those two components. Chanu, dedicated, and Ka would be the letters Kaf and He in Hebrew, which can become an abbreviation, a numeric abbreviation for the number 25, which is the day of the month that we celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah, the 25th of the Hebrew month of Kislev. So it means dedication, but we like to make meaning grow.
Hanukkah does seem to always overlap what Christians would call the Christmas season.
First of all, to clarify on the calendar, the Hebrew calendar is not the Gregorian calendar, but different from the Muslim calendar, there is a lining up with the seasons. You won't have Hanukkah ever happening in the spring or in the summer.
Like so, Ramadan would change.
Exactly. So there's a corrective mechanism. I'm not the mathematician that others might be, but that every number of years, there is a leap year on the Jewish calendar, which adds a month to make up for any of the differences. Because after all, the ancient Jewish calendar was based on the agrarian culture in the land of Israel. So the harvest season, which is marked by harvest holidays, would always happen in the same period of the year. So Hanukkah, yes, does always happen during the winter. I think there's actually some great spiritual value in that lining up. Mm.
For people who may be new and have only heard the word, maybe they've suspected there were candles involved or don't know the word menorah, would you just briefly walk us through and then we can dig in a bit deeper? What
For
is
sure.
the observance?
So the observance of Hanukkah, not the story, we'll get there, but the observance of Hanukkah is that for 8 nights and the corresponding days that follow, so 8 nights, 8 days, families will gather together in their home or in synagogue or in some communal gathering, lighting a Chanukiah, which is different from a menorah. Those two words, while conflated by many, are not the same. Mm-hmm. A menorah is a 7-branched candelabrum from the ancient temple. A Chanukiah is the ritual observance of Hanukkah. So each night we light one candle, and then in addition to the one that had been before. So on the first night, we light one candle, the second night, two, and by the 8th night, we light 8. there are beautiful stories as to how that evolved, because that's not actually the original obligation. That is actually the entire observance. We say the blessings, we light the candles, we witness the light, and that's it. In America, it became a little bit different, but that's the observance at its core.
And what is the commemoration of the lights? What is that representing?
All right. So that requires some more of the story. In 586 BCE, the first temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. When that temple was destroyed, the Assyrian Greek Empire that took over the entire region made it forbidden to conduct Jewish rituals and observance publicly. Part of the way they did that was to desecrate, in Jewish terms, the temple by introducing idols and by removing all of the Jewish ritual items or subverting them to an idolatrous purpose. One of the ways that Jews had observed, had connected to God in the temple, was by the constant lighting of the menorah, the seven-branch candelabrum. It was specific oil that we used to light those branches, those candles, or oil deposits, as it were. And when the Maccabees revolted against the Assyrian Greeks in around the second century BCE, the rededication of the temple, which Hanukkah commemorates, required the restart of the observances, but there wasn't enough oil to last a period of time that would be required to create, to produce new oil. But they lit anyway, and that actually has deep spiritual significance as well. To light when you're not sure you have enough, to give when you're not sure there will be enough, to take a leap of action, as Rabbi Abram Joshua Heschel called it, and to light anyway. And the miracle was that the oil that they had lasted for 8 days, which actually allowed for the production of new sacred oil.
So that commemoration, night by night, increasingly added, celebrates those days.
It's one of my favorite parts. And the Talmud says, Talmud is that collection of rabbinic thinking from 2,000 years ago.
Commentary.
Yeah, expansive rabbinic imaginative creative enterprise. Talmud is an easier shorthand for it, but it encompasses legend and law. It's beautiful. The category of observer that is exemplified here is called Mehadrin Min HaMehadrin, the beautifiers beyond beautifying. And so they say more light every night, more light, more light, as a way of, I think, increasing the spiritual experience, not just the fulfillment of ritual requirement.
And at least for us in the Northern Hemisphere, it is coincidental, at least, with when the days start or about to start to get longer and return to light.
Yeah.
This interesting connection.
I don't know all faiths, but many have a recognition that starts at least in the Bible, the core of which we share, the church and Jewish tradition share, that God's first creative act was light. And that doesn't judge the colors that are dark, but it means the absence of light is something that we respond to with fire and with warmth and with illumination. So it makes sense in the human experience that when it's dark and when it gets dark earlier, we bring our light. In fact, there's a modern Israeli song called Banu Choshech Legaresh. We have come to dispel the darkness. And I think that's what people of faith hope to do in the world, hopefully with love and kindness, to bring light where there isn't enough.
Are there common misconceptions that you read or you hear and you think, oh my goodness?
Yeah, always, always. When outsiders look in, there are always misconceptions about what the secrets of a faith are or the actual practicing might look like. And so Hanukkah is actually one of the least important holidays on the Jewish calendar from a Jewish perspective.
It's not Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah.
There are strata of biblical holidays, and then there are modern historic holidays. And in the biblical canon, Hanukkah doesn't even exist. It's in the Apocrypha, the not included ancient texts that the Hanukkah story is given. In fact, in the Talmud that we mentioned before, there's no book about Hanukkah, even though the Talmud was codified after the story happened. You have to look inside of the stories of Shabbat, the Sabbath tractate, to understand anything about Hanukkah. So the public perception that Hanukkah is for Jews on par with where Christmas is for Christians is a deep misconception. Mm. But it is also true, especially in the American experience, that as a society that tries to share its beauty, and I say share with a whole bunch of charitable intent there, the way Christmas has influenced everyone's sense of sanctity and warmth and kindness and even coffee flavors during the period of time influenced the way rabbis in the late 1800s shifted the Jewish observance of Hanukkah based on the American experience. So the whole idea of gift giving has nothing to do with Hanukkah. But the rabbis in America in the late 1880s and then the early 20th century were committed to making the holidays beautiful for our children. And why should anyone feel left out? So there were actually Yiddish ads placed in Jewish papers encouraging parents to give children gifts on Hanukkah for two reasons. One is there were toy shops that wanted to advertise. But also, we want the experience of our holidays to be beautiful. Mm. It's one of the interesting dances that I think particular faiths have, which is how to be authentically ourselves and how to let in the beauty that's around us. It's one of the reasons that these kinds of conversations between faiths ends up revealing so much commonality of spirit. It's among the most rewarding ways that I get to live my life as a rabbi, to have these interchanges.
I wonder if I could call on your personal experience. Like, what do you first remember? Do you remember a first realization as a child? Oh, this is Hanukkah, and it feels this way.
Yeah. The rabbis of antiquity, in their understanding that more light is a better spiritual experience, what they said in Hebrew is, Ma'alin b'kdusha ve'ein moridin, we rise up in holiness, we never reduce. I remember as a child feeling the glow of the candles and longing for it. No one ever told me, this isn't an important holiday. It's an important holiday. It's the most beautiful. The light fills our home. And I remember being so proud that I got to strike a match to light a candle at a certain point, being scared, but being invited in and finding my way. And of course, I have memories of gifts. I remember my mother decorating the coffee table with Hanukkah-themed wrapping paper, which, looking back, like, it's so sweet. It's so funny. And I want to say this, very American, but it didn't make me miss the gift for the gift wrapping. It actually brought me closer into the experience of joy and renewal and rededication, because not everything is reduced by the aesthetic intention. Sometimes it actually helps the spiritual connectivity.
Because you and your wife have a number of children, do you see this observance connecting them to their heritage and their tradition and their faith?
Yes, I'll say for a number of reasons, Hanukkah becomes more important over time. Also because it's less burdensome as rituals go. You know, the experience of Yom Kippur, for instance, the holiest day on the Jewish calendar, is an extraordinarily demanding one. It involves abstinence from all sorts of pleasurable things, eating and drinking. It requires a lot of time in prayer, in synagogue. And while I find those very rewarding, I don't think children necessarily do. So to have a holiday that is easier and more fun and illuminating and inclusive, and then each one of them has their own Chanukiah. So by the end, it's a bonfire in our home, which of course, from a fire marshal perspective, is worrisome. But from a family experience and from a personal growth experience, it is literally stunning to stand witness to the glow in our own home. And a dimension that we actually haven't spoken about yet in our conversation is the placement of the Chanukiah. Because actually one of the requirements, and this has been complicated in certain moments of Jewish history, is to place the Chanukiah where it can be seen outside of the home. It's called in Aramaic, actually, Pirsume Denisa, publicizing the miracle. And in different moments of Jewish history, that was a risk to take.
Yeah.
Painted a target in anti-Semitic contexts on your own home. And there are wonderful, exceptional stories where a town in Wisconsin, after an episode of anti-Semitism, everyone, Jewish and not, lit Chanukiot in their own windows to stand in solidarity. There are glorious moments like that to talk about.
Yeah, that's very moving.
It's very moving. And we are currently in a moment where there is a significant uptick in anti-Semitism in the United States. These moments of solidarity where if there's a public display of a Christmas tree, that there is sensitivity and solidarity shown in the public sphere to have a celebration of Hanukkah too. It doesn't equate them. It might be confusing for many to see the conflation of them, but I think it's worth the risk because each of these is a public symbol for the belonging that every faith deserves, certainly in America and around the world.
There are times when people want to pay tribute or understand a holiday from another tradition, but there's always the danger of overstepping. For instance, we have this with Passover, where people are very interested in Passover. It also coincides in the spring with Easter. And there are some Christians who, instead of studying about it, decide, well, let's do one. What do you say to people who might be wanting to do some sort of observance, but you don't want it to carry into taking someone else's very valued tradition?
I cannot tell you how much I appreciate that question. The line between appreciation, solidarity, and appropriation is a bright one. It's very hard when people have the best of intents and trip over it. And so one of the things I would say, and this isn't to the non-Jew who wants to share, it's to the Jews who are in that situation. To come at this from a place of confidence and being forgiving is a really important way to show up gracefully in relationship. So I have responses to those. The most recent example I've seen is an effort, which is meant to be in solidarity with the Jewish people, but an effort to create a Christian version of the mezuzah. Mm. So the mezuzah is the scroll that includes part of the Torah that we place on the doorpost. And in solidarity with the Jewish people, being as charitable as I can, because I think it's meant sweetly, to place mezuzahs, but if it's a Christian home, to have verses of Christian scripture in the mezuzah, which is not only confusing, it is certainly appropriating. Right. And your example of the Seder is also. So I would say this, I'm a Jew, come to my Seder. Please come to my Seder. Let's share the ritual experience in an authentic way, which means I host. And the traditions are maintained. Similarly, I would never expect to go to a Christian experience and facilitate it myself. Not only do I not know how, that's also not my calling. I believe God has so many faces that each of our languages can be welcomed by the infinite. So, to your simpler question than my more complicated response, if someone who isn't Jewish wishes to connect to someone who is Jewish around Hanukkah, simply saying Happy Hanukkah is the whole game. Mm. If you want to be really nice, give a gift. But that's not Hanukkah. That's just you being a nice friend.
Not just Hanukkah, but the different observances, Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah, recently Sukkot. How do those connect you with your tradition? Those, it's not the weekly time on Shabbat in the synagogue, but those once a year, those types of things, how do they connect you to God and to your tradition?
Judaism for me is a whole life perspective and experience. And so if I point to this holiday and say, this is how it brings me close to God and connects me to tradition, and then I point to another one and I dissect them, while there's truth in that, and the flow of the year contains many different facets and emotions, I am always swimming in these traditions, the ones that are constant and the ones that are one time on the calendar, even ones that are episodic and life cycle based. I'll just say moments of grief, but I can include in that the Jewish holiday of Tisha B'Av during the summer, where we commemorate the destruction of the Jerusalem temple. It is a deeply sad day. I can include in that Yom HaShoah V'Gvura, the day of Holocaust and heroism, where another very sad large time is compressed and remembered in a day. And recently I can include October 7th on the secular calendar or the holiday of Simchat Torah, where it coincided with October 7th in 2023. Those days remind me to be very grateful for what I have and to be cautious with the fragility of Jewish safety and to not take that for granted either. And it's not on the other side. They're all of these sides speak to each other. The enormous gratitude that Hanukkah tells me about, that Purim, the celebration of Jewish survival in a terribly hostile circumstance, or Passover's notion of rebirth and national identity, not only do they sensitize me to the stories about myself, they sensitize me to the world in which I live. So the Torah, and therefore I, extrapolate from the experience of having been a stranger in a strange land, the Passover narrative. Not only do I repeat it twice a day when I wake and when I go to sleep, the Torah says 36 times based on that experience to never oppress the stranger because you know what it was to be a stranger. So the larger question that you ask, the largest question anyone can ask, how does it connect me to God? Each one of these holy days includes essential memories, trajectories, and a language of shared humanity. So that there are two sides of this. Whatever I would fight for someone else, their human rights, I should fight no less for myself. And whatever I believe I deserve or my children deserve, I should fight for everyone to have as well. It's ultimately each holiday, the larger texture of a Jewish year, makes manifest the central command to love my neighbor as myself, which means, all right, love yourself. Love your neighbor that way too. Some of us have an easier time with the neighbor part than the self part. So these holidays remind me that I'm not alone. I'm connected to my people, and my people is connected to people and therefore to God.
What about your faith brings you the most joy? Or your service as a rabbi, whatever it might be, what brings you joy in your faith life?
The cherishing of the next generation is the most joyous thing I know. And I use Hebrew words, though I'm sure everybody has their own way as a loving person to offer this to someone else, be it a child, be it someone else's child, your student, be it a friend. But to share blessing with my children and to know that I'm using the same language that my ancestor Jacob did with his children and grandchildren. There is a lot to point at that's beautiful in tradition, but there is nothing holier than blessing my children with biblical words.
I remember at the Israel Museum where the scrolls are.
Yeah, the Dead Sea Scrolls. Yeah.
A friend there that I love to work with, Asher Ashkenazi. He had his little boy there, grade schooler. And as we're there, he says, come here for a minute. And he holds his son up and said, you know, how old is that scroll? And he points and he has his son start reading. And he said, he can read this Isaiah scroll.
Yeah.
After all these centuries, I was just so impressed with that moment.
Yeah, I've been in that spot. I can only agree from the depth of me with it.
So at the end of many Christmas programs that I have been to in my church and other churches, they say, and let us carry this spirit out with us and all year long. They're talking about an actual spirit of generosity. Is there something about Hanukkah that you observe or that you remember throughout the year?
It's so important to remember that holidays, while on the calendar might be episodic, their messages are not. And so Hanukkah is, in so many ways, an encouraging holiday. It invites courage. It invites bravery to put your light out where people can see it, is to say, world, I'm here. I have something to offer. And our world needs that reminder too, that we're willing as individuals to show up and to increase the shared light with our own. I hope that even when the days last longer and we get to the summer, we're still doing what Hanukkah instructs us to do, which is show up and be a gift to everyone around you. I think that that's miraculous. In so many moments of our lives, at least for me, I wonder if I have enough, if my reserves will be enough to last as long as maybe others or I need it to last. Chanukah says, yes, you have enough. You are enough. What you bring is the essential light that's been missing so far.
That was Rabbi Menachem Creditor speaking with Steve about Hanukkah and how it's celebrated and what it really means to him and to the people of the Jewish faith. I don't remember how old I was, maybe 9 or 10 years old. And at my school, we were making like these paper chains for the holidays. And there was one that was red and green paper that was for Christmas. And there were just tons of kids doing that. And then they had one that was blue and white. And that was supposed to be for Hanukkah. And there was like nobody working on it. And I remember working on it because there were these Bible videos I watched when I was younger that emphasized the fact like Jesus was a Jew. And I was like, oh, I can participate in this. I believe in Jesus and he was a Jew. It's been interesting as I've grown older, thinking more about Hanukkah and thinking more about Judaism as well. Like we talked about this idea of religious envy. It's one of those religions where I've felt that maybe more than others. And I really love how Rabbi Creditor talked about it, like the way that they celebrate and remember certain days that are so significant to them, and that Hanukkah actually isn't even the most significant out of all of them, despite maybe what we think.
Yeah, maybe, as he said, in some ways, the most enjoyable for kids.
We had the experience this year of participating in Sukkot with some Jewish folks and hearing a little bit about how the Jewish holidays rank. We've got Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, which highly ritualistic, very high demand kind of holiday. And then Sukkot is like kicking back with your friends in a tent and having a great meal. And then Hanukkah is even simpler. Let's light a candle and let's just appreciate how beautiful that illumination, Steve, that you brought up, how beautiful that illumination is in a dark world.
And that is celebrated different ways throughout the world, a particular way in the U.S. that we heard about. But as you said, just that representation of light. So anything that brings light to the world and celebrates the light within each of us and sharing that, I just think is something I can wholeheartedly, at the very least, to my friend say, Happy Hanukkah. Many thanks to Rabbi Menachem Creditor for speaking with us. This episode was produced by James Sturtevant. Our production team also includes Heather Bigley, Aaliyah Ebert, and Katarina Martinich. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Lauren Sandberg, and Ashton Parkinson. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure you leave a comment or review wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, or Apple. That helps spread the word. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod. Instagram and Facebook, we're at InGoodFaithPodcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here in Good Faith.
We speak every week with people of different religious traditions and faiths. They don't all agree, but we find the commonalities and we're inspired by their search and their journey. I want to recommend another BYU podcast I think you're going to like. It's Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. It's brand new. There's video as well as audio. And if you want to learn how to engage with others on important topics, but maybe you don't know how, or you've just had it with social media and people arguing and demonizing each other, check out Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. There's a new one every Wednesday. You can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. We have another podcast in our BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Appleseed. It's a way to take a journey anytime you would like with stories. Nationally known storytellers telling everything from folktales and fairy tales, personal stories and family tales. It's a great way to get everybody laughing or thinking about some particular topic. And it almost always leads to conversations in the family. If you hit pause after a story and say, what did you think about that? And boy, what does that remind you of? That is a fun time to get to share each other's stories. And that's what The Appleseed does. Check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.